Folks, have you checked out the Irish History Podcast shop recently? Right now, I have a sale of 30% off everything when you use the code SALE30. So go to irishhistorypodcast.ie/shop and get 30% off everything when you use the discount code SALE30.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Irish History Podcast. My name is Finn Dwyer and this is A Thousand Years From Home. No matter where you are in the world now, the stress and difficulties that COVID-19 has placed in our lives is undoubtedly affecting you in some way. So I thought a bit of escapism might be in order. In this podcast, I'm bringing you to explore some of the great history and historic places near my home in Kilkenny City. Now, COVID-19 related restrictions mean I can only walk within 2 kilometres of my house, but there's some amazing places we're going to see. Over the next 40 minutes or so, we'll cover about 1,000 years of history, starting in a 19th century asylum, working our way down through medieval streets, visiting the grave of a historic dog, taking in a medieval hospital, a famine graveyard, and then finishing with the story of a forgotten hero. Now, before I kick off, I want to say thanks to the patrons of the show, as always, who are essentially the producers behind the Irish History Podcast. Without their support, I couldn't do it. If you want to support the show and get the bonus content available only to patrons, including a new weekly bonus series on medieval life, check out patreon.com/Irish podcast. That's patreon.com/Irish podcast. Finally, I want to say thanks to everyone who participated in the quiz last Saturday. It was a great success with over 300 people involved who gave generously to the Martyr Foundation. I understand lots of you weren't able to participate on the night for one reason or another, so I'm going to record the questions in podcast format and you'll be able to test your knowledge on a self-correcting quiz that'll be available online. That'll be available probably next Friday. Now, let's kick off the show. Now, I've actually just arrived very close to the first stop, which is the Kilkenny District Asylum, which was built during the famine. And this is a really, I suppose, severe, dour, imposing building. I think it would speak to anyone, if you didn't know anything about the history of this building and you came here, I think you'd have a sense of what it was, or certainly you'd know it was an institution, and a Victorian institution. The history of this building, I suppose, is, I wouldn't say tragic, but it's a sad history. This was built just after the famine. It had actually been commissioned from 1846 as part of a network of asylums to be built across Ireland, and this was completed in 1852. It cost £23,000 at the time. And after the famine, there was certainly a sense, and this would continue right through the 19th century, that insanity was increasing in Ireland. At the time, it was not fully understood, and some of the things that they talk about in terms of insanity, we wouldn't even think had anything to do with mental illness, and it doesn't indeed, because of our better understanding. But certainly the famine, just at this point when it was built, seems to have affected people psychologically in Ireland, quite understandably. People had witnessed and experienced horrific things. And I did find, in just preparing this podcast, I found an article that was called Lunacy in Ireland. And I tried to explain why there was an increase in the numbers of people coming to places like asylums in need of help. And this article just referenced that Ireland was a faction-torn, fever-struck, and emigration-abandoned island. And there's obviously there's truth to that, and what they're referring to there, maybe in an oblique way, is the famine. Now, people who'd find themselves here, though, you'd have to wonder how much they were being treated. And there's certainly a sense, being here, they're actually coming here to be kept away from society rather than them themselves being helped. It's an unusual building. It has two very odd towers on either side. It's symmetrical. The windows are narrow. It faces, unusually, the front of the building faces away from the road, looking out on the river valley below it. But it's very much orientated away from Kilkenny City. It's at the edge of the city. So there's an idea that people here are being isolated, kept away from wider society. So the people who you'd find here in the 19th century are people who don't really need mental help at all. So, like, I found a report from the 1850s about the people who were, incarcerated might be a word, who were incarcerated here. They included what were called at the time, and it's a word that was used then, five idiots. I don't really know specifically what that refers to. Then there's 10 epileptics, just people with epilepsy, would have been brought to asylums. There's 25 people who they say are probably curable mania. That's probably just depression, I would imagine. And then 84 probably incurable cases. Now, here in the asylum, I think we probably all had this idea of somewhere like that horrific asylum, Bedlam. It probably wasn't as bad as that from what I could read. The asylum was set on quite large grounds. Patients, if they could, would go out and be involved in agricultural work. Inside, there was a laundry, which was a much, obviously, a bleaker place to have to work. But there was cooking, cleaning, knitting, things like that. So they would try and keep people active, which would have been obviously important. Through the 19th century, though, the cases, what's striking is that the cases of insanity, or what are deemed at the time insanity, rises really fast. So in 1851, just at the end of the famine, one in 657 people in the population were deemed to have had mental illnesses. By the year 1901, that had increased to one in 178. So that's a stark increase there. It's dropped from one in 657 to one in 178. Now, a figure like that really begs the question, what's going on? And I kind of delved into it a little bit more, and I found a somewhat bizarre report from 1892. It was a commission that investigated insanity and kind of questioned this issue. Why has Ireland got this really, what seems to be a very serious problem with mental illness in the 19th century? And there's some really bizarre ideas forwarded in this. In one place, they say that people are drinking too much tea. When they talk about Kilkenny, I'm going to have to quote this for you. When they're talking about Kilkenny, they blame it on, in this district, the only point specially dealt on as likely to have influenced the number of insane treated in the asylum is that of marriages of consanguinity. That's basically marrying your cousin. In the southern part of the district, it is stated that a very large number of relatives intermarry, and it is observed that there are more admissions from that than the northern section of the district. Obviously, this is, like, I think, prejudice about Irish society and about rural Irish society at the time. That's not what's going on. What they do raise in this report, which is very interesting, though, is they raise the issue of emigration. And they say that emigration is leading to the increasing numbers of people who find themselves in these institutions. And the reason that emigration is leading to increasing numbers of people in asylums is that what would have happened previously was probably a much more caring regime, where people would have looked after maybe family members, brothers, uncles, aunts, their children with mental illnesses at home. But because large numbers of people and younger people are emigrating, these people have nowhere to turn, and they end up in asylums. And asylums, certainly by this point, appear to be becoming what they were in the 20th century in Ireland. And it's a really horrific, bleak way of using them, but they were kind of used as dumping grounds for people who were unwanted in society, that they'd be sent to places like this. As I mentioned earlier, it faces in off the road, and they were seen as a problem that society wouldn't have to deal with, and it could be locked away. And what's a worrying indication of what life in the asylum was like, and it's probably a reflection of this fact that it's becoming a dumping ground for people who can never really leave, is that the population of the asylum in 1901 was 441 people, and there had been 37 deaths that year. That's a death rate of over 8%, far higher than it had been in the early years of the asylum. Now, 11 people had died from TB, 9 had died from influenza, but there seems to be a very high death rate. And what it probably is that there's large numbers of older people essentially being dumped here. They would have been cared previously by a generation who are now in England, in America, unable to look after them. The idea that places like these district asylums were this almost dumping ground of Irish society, would become even worse after independence. The numbers here in Kilkenny reached a peak in 1939, when there was 550 people in an institution that had originally been built in the 1850s for just 160. Now, at the back of the building, there is a series of extensions, but not enough to cater for a fourfold increase. Ireland in the 1950s, as far as I can remember the year was, but around the 1950s, had one of the highest rates of incarceration in institutions like this anywhere in the world. Like, that's per head of population. And it was only in the 1980s where Ireland starts to change its approach to mental illness, and you start to get, I suppose, what's called a deinstitutionalization, that the idea that people should be cared for in the community, that mental illness should not be stigmatized in the way it had been, and these people are no longer being sent into institutions like this one here. But that's the first stop. Next, we're going to go to somewhere completely different. I'm going to go down and bring us into an old ruins down on the River Nore, and we'll explore what was one of the major mills that operated in Kilkenny in the 19th century. Now I'm walking over the River Nore, and the River Nore is the feature in the landscape that brought people to Kilkenny in the first place and kept them here for 1,000 years. It's probably only in the last century that the importance of the river to life in Kilkenny has diminished. The reason I've come down here is to visit an old ruin that's about a kilometre and a half outside the original city, and this is what was known as Fennessy's Mills, and I'm going to pick up the story when I get down to the mill. You might be able to hear the River Nore, it's just to my left. But as I'm walking down here, I'm coming down through an area that's referred to in Kilkenny as the canal. And a lot of people who visit Kilkenny are maybe a bit surprised by this, because the city doesn't have a canal as such. But as I'm walking down here, there's lots of waterways that have been cut into the landscape that are diverting water from the Nore. And these were constructed to power what was at one point a lot of mills along the riverbank. And if you'd come to Kilkenny in the 19th century, it would have had a much more industrial feel than it does today. Today, I suppose, a lot of its history has been stripped back, for want of a better word, and it's much more medieval in feel, or at least what we think is medieval in feel. But in the 19th century, I think it would have had a much more industrial feel. And I'm just approaching here what was Fennessy's Mills. Now, Fennessy's Mills is a building that's in the middle of trees. It's a total ruin today. It looks like it might have even, at one point, suffered a fire. I'm going to go inside the building, and inside this building you get a sense of how big Kilkenny's industry would have been once upon a time. Well, this was a sawmill, there was the Ormond Mills, and then on the other side of the river from the Ormond Mills, the Lacken Mills, and further up the river, several other mills. And these would have been the centre of an industry in Kilkenny that would have employed thousands of people in the early 19th century and late 18th century. The architecture of them is actually beautiful. Sadly, they're totally in ruin today. This building has nothing inside it. There's trees growing up it, but you can still see the amazing architecture of where they cut channels of water and diverted them through the middle of the building, and these would have powered the big water wheels that would have powered the saws. Conditions in these mills were pretty appalling. I was looking through newspapers, and you see, I don't want to overstate it, but frequently enough references to horrific accidents, and we're talking about the 19th century and 19th century industry, where labour law and labour protections simply didn't exist. So you've got people working in mills that are extremely dangerous. There's not, you know, like in terms of safety, isn't really factored in. The primary thing, I suppose, is speed and productivity. And there's an expendable workforce. Now, Kilkenny's industry totally, almost ceases to exist, I suppose you could say, in the 19th century. And the reason that is that places like Fennessy's Mills, where I'm standing now, this was described as a ruin by the 1890s. And one of the central reasons for this is something called the Act of Union. And the Act of Union had brought Ireland into the United Kingdom in 1801. And Irish industry was devastated after that. It had already faced serious problems, but the government now, Ireland was ruled from England, and the British government obviously naturally favoured industry in Britain, and Irish industry was essentially wound down. So those thousands of people, and I've covered this in some of the famine podcasts, those thousands of people who would have worked in these mills from Kilkenny and the surrounding areas would have found themselves largely unemployed by the time of the famine. Now that just gives you a sense of maybe some of the industrial heritage of Kilkenny. What I want to do now is go up to Kilkenny Castle. And when I'm up at the castle, I'm not actually going to talk about the castle itself, but instead a forgotten grave that's up there. I think that in many ways explains so much about what that castle represented to maybe our great grandparents and our ancestors before that. I've come from Fenice's Mills back towards the centre of Kilkenny, and I'm now walking into the grounds of Kilkenny Castle. And the grounds of the castle are always an interesting place, I think, because in many ways it summarises the democratisation, I suppose, of Irish society. In the 19th century, this would have been exclusively the preserve of the family of the Marquesses of Ormond. So the castle was their personal home. But today it's open to the public, and I think in many ways that summarises a lot of the changes that have happened in Irish society over the last 100 or so years. While I'm here though, I'm not going to go up to the castle. I've covered the history of the castle, it's in a few episodes now. There is one small grave though that in many ways summarises a lot of what I would like to say about this place anyway. The grounds of the castle themselves are pretty expansive. There's actually even a hunting lodge down towards the river. I don't know how many acres they'd cover, but it's, I don't know, certainly dozens, maybe even hundreds. I'm pretty poor at guessing that kind of stuff. I've come to a slice, I suppose what you'd call depression though in the park, that's pretty close to the castle, but can't be seen from the castle. And that's very important given what's here. So the Butler family owned Kilkenny Castle since 1391, and they lived here. This was their primary residence, and they would have lived here. Most of the Butlers, though, are buried up in Caithness Cathedral, and there's some beautiful funeral effigies to the Butler family. However, from 18, the last person buried up there was John Butler, the Marquess of Ormond, who was buried up there in 1854. And after John Butler, the family opened up a funeral plot on the grounds of the castle. But given it was the Victorian era, there's a lot of superstition, obviously, around death. Death is something, in many ways, that's hidden away. It can't be seen, this graveyard can't be seen from the castle. It's in, as I say, a bit of a depression on the in the castle park, and then it's surrounded by bushes. But I'm just going in now into the grave plot. So basically, there's a Celtic cross, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 8, 9 graves here to different members of the Butler family. Into the 20th century, there's one here, for example, to the Nan, Marchioness of Ormond, born June 1906, died September 1973. So it's relatively contemporary. But there's a tomb that I want to go and see that lies outside the perimeter of the cemetery. And unfortunately, it's actually broken. I've come and seen this loads of times and it's been smashed, but the two pieces of the tomb are here. And I can still read it, and it says, "In loving memory of Sandy," and there's a dog's head carved into the tomb that I'm looking at, and it says, "The most devoted and beloved friend and companion for 17 years, born at Lochmore, April 1895, died June the 4th, 1911. And then there's a little tribute or whatever, and it says, "There are men, both good and wise, who hold that in a future state, dumb creatures we have cherished here below shall give us joyous greeting when we pass the Golden Gate." And in many ways, this is a lovely gesture, isn't it? It's like the Marquess of Ormond gets his dog a tomb, and the tomb is just outside the perimeter of the cemetery. There's another way, though, I can't help but look at this and think this is in 1912, 2 years before the First World War, everything that went with that. I've covered on countless occasions in previous podcasts about the poverty that would have been in Ireland in the early 20th century. And you look at this grave of the dog, there's people who probably worked in Kilkenny that wouldn't have earned what it cost to make this grave in weeks, months, maybe even a year. And it does in many ways, while it's on one level a very touching gesture, on another, it symbolises the inequality that in many ways Kilkenny Castle itself represents. The castle was a family home with maybe, I don't know, is there 100 rooms in it? In a time where most people lived in tiny houses, the grave of a dog worth more than most people's incomes at the time also summarises that. The next stop is, I'm going to go back now further a few centuries. I'm going to go down into Kilkenny City itself, and we're going to talk a little bit about the medieval history, because I think that's what most people would associate with Kilkenny.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Recently, I had a minor argument with a close friend that brought up things from my past that I really needed to get off my chest. I think we've all been there. Now, I found therapy a really great way to work through these issues. For me, I really like online therapy, and BetterHelp is a really great online service that allows you to make space for therapy no matter how busy you are. BetterHelp is convenient, affordable, and gives you the support you need, but also works around your schedule. It's really easy to get up and running with a therapist on BetterHelp. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. You can do your sessions by text, phone, or video call, whichever suits you best. It's all about flexibility, working around your schedule. At the moment, BetterHelp are offering listeners to the show 10% off their first month. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Irish History today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Irish History. I've come up through the Castle Park and I'm actually walking across the Castle Courtyard now. Kilkenny Castle is a bit unusual in that it's actually only a three-sided castle. The fourth was blown away by a very eager visitor, Oliver Cromwell, in 1649 in the Siege of Kilkenny. Blew his way into the city by putting a breach in the castle wall. But I'm walking across the courtyard and I'm going out a much more modern gate that was cut into the castle wall later on, and we're going into what was, I suppose, the medieval city of Kilkenny. Now, Kilkenny is famous, I suppose, for being a medieval city. It has a medieval mile that runs from between here at the castle and up to St. Canice's Cathedral, which I'll get up to in a while. But actually, if truth be told, a lot of the buildings you see in Kilkenny today that we might think are medieval are not really medieval. They're often dating, I suppose, to what historians or archaeologists refer to as the early modern period. You're talking about the 16th, 17th, centuries, where the medieval world is ebbing away, and there's not a clear-cut line between the two of them, but certainly very few of the buildings you'll see in Kilkenny are medieval. I'll get to some of them later on. But what is medieval, and I'm going to try and give you a sense now of medieval Kilkenny, is the street pattern. So the castle was built around the year 1200. And the other big feature in the landscape was St. Canice's Cathedral at the far end of the city. And the city grew up in between these two buildings. And the street pattern that was laid out probably sometime around 1200 is preserved in the streets today. So there's two main streets, I guess, between them. One is Kieran Street, one is High Street. And then in between the two, there's lots of lanes. And if you had come here, say, pick a year in the Middle Ages, let's say the year 1300, Kilkenny would have been quite different than we might imagine. We often think of the medieval world as unchanging, insular, I suppose backward. But if you'd come to Kilkenny in the year 1300, you probably would have found things that would surprise you. Kilkenny was much better connected into the wider world than you might imagine. There was merchants who would have operated here from not just Ireland and England and Wales, say, but from further afield in France. And it's very hard to encapsulate what a medieval city looked like when you're walking down and you can hear traffic in the background. So I do have this sound of what I think medieval Kilkenny would sound like, and it just might give you a sense of things like the different languages that you would have heard if you'd come to medieval Kilkenny, say, as we said, in the year 1300, but also maybe how vibrant it was, and at times how raucous it was. Because, as I say, so what I'm going to do is put that on. You can listen to this while I'll make my way down to a medieval building, and we're going to talk about probably the most famous event and one that echoes into our present dilemmas that we face today, and we're going to talk about the Black Death down there. I've made my way through those medieval streets and I've come onto Parliament Street now. I'm just about to turn off Parliament Street down something called the Ring. And directly ahead of me now, there's a famous gate in Kilkenny. And over that gate it says E. Smithick and Sons Limited. This is the famous St. Francis's Brewery in Kilkenny, where Smithick's was brewed from the early 1700s. It closed recently enough, and the brewery is currently being redeveloped. But I haven't come here to talk about the history of the brewery. I want to talk about St. Francis's Friary, where the brewery got its name. Long before there was ever a Smithick's brewery on this site, the Franciscan Order had established a Franciscan friary in the heart of medieval Kilkenny. Now, this would become famous, particularly in the later Middle Ages, during the Black Death. So the Black Death affected Ireland in the late 1340s. It arrived in Kilkenny in about Christmas 1348. And at the time, the guardian of St. Francis's Friary was a man called John Clynn. Now, John Clynn was from a place called Clynstown, just outside Kilkenny. But as guardian, he had been keeping a chronicle of life in Kilkenny from at least the 1330s, where he noted down what were memorable events. A lot of it is very local politics, things like that. But when the Black Death arrived in Kilkenny, he would write one of the most famous accounts of his experience of the Great Plague, which hit Kilkenny, as I say, in December 1348, and would have lasted then into the following summer. Now, you're about to hear some of his words about the plague, and they are truly chilling in many ways when you look back and think of what he was experiencing, genuinely thinking the end of the world had arrived and uncertain whether anyone would survive. It's worth bearing in mind the mortality rate in the Great Plague was truly horrific. You're talking about 30 to 50% of the population dying in the space of 6 months, creating all these untold problems about how you even bury the dead. So John Clynn's words now will give you a sense of what that was like. While you're listening to his words, I'm going to make my way to the next building, which is going to take us right back to around the year 1100.
The pestilence gathered strength in Kilkenny during Lent, for between Christmas Day and March 6th, 8 friars preachers died. There was scarcely a house in which only one died, but commonly man and wife, with their children and family, going one way, namely crossing unto death. Now I, Friar John Clynn, having written these noteworthy deeds that happened in my time, and lest the writing should perish with the writer, I am leaving parchment for the work to continue, if by chance, in the future, a man should remain surviving, and anyone of the race of Adam should be able to escape this plague.
I've reached the northern end of the original medieval city of Kilkenny, and I'm making my way up a set of stone steps. At the top of the steps is Kilkenny's St. Canice's Cathedral, which was built in the early 13th century. This is constructed by the Normans after the Norman conquest of Ireland. But I want to talk about one specific structure on the site of St. Canice's Cathedral, just to give you a sense. Now, it's hard to make out today, but St. Canice's Cathedral is actually built on a rocky outcrop, so it's on quite high land in Kilkenny's landscape. But the building I want to talk about here is actually the Round Tower, which is right beside the cathedral, but looks almost somewhat out of space. Round towers are very narrow, very tall towers, and they're found at monastic sites in Ireland. Now, the interpretation of the history of them is changing. Previously, they were thought to be a defensive structure that during the period of Viking attacks, monks would be able to retreat into these round towers and stay there while the Vikings would have maybe sacked the monastery. And certainly we do know that there was a monastic site here from the 6th or 7th century. So you're talking back around the year 700. Where I am now, there was the earliest sites associated, I suppose, with the settlement of Kilkenny. Now, the Round Tower, though, is much later, and it doesn't, that idea I previously mentioned that it would be a refuge against Viking attack, on one level it makes lots of sense, because the River Nore, which I've talked about lots of times throughout the podcast, is very close to here, and you could imagine maybe Vikings, which had a large settlement at Waterford, could come up the river, attack the monastery. But the timeline of the Round Tower doesn't really fit that. So the Round Tower probably dates to the early 12th century. That's around the year 1100. And it's thought now that this was actually put here, I suppose, as a landmark. So in 1111, at the Synod of Rathbrazel, Kilkenny was made the centre, the ecclesiastical centre of the Diocese of Ossory. And that was a very important part in terms of the story of Kilkenny and it becoming a very important place in the landscape. And as part of marking that, that this was becoming a very important religious landscape, it's thought that maybe that's why the Round Tower was built, because they don't really have much of a defensive structure to them. Because even though they are a tower, if you retreat inside that, the most logical thing that would happen is that the Vikings would just set the tower on fire, and then it actually becomes a natural chimney. And now it's thought that they were much more symbolic, that they were this huge tower reaching up into the landscape at a time where most buildings would have been one, maybe two stories tall. This would have been visible for miles around, and as I said, it's built on a rocky outcrop, and that this would have given, I suppose, prestige to the site. Now, this is as far back into history as we're going to go. Our interpretation even of structures at this time gets hazier and hazier as we go back. We don't know who built this. We can only guess as to why they built it. That is because now, as I say, we're back at the year 1100. I want to start moving back towards the present. That's going to take me across the River Nore onto the east bank of the river. Over there, I'm going to stop at a cemetery. I'm going to stop at a very, very early hospital, not the type of place you want to find yourself. I'm going to finish then in a graveyard at the grave of a man who I think is a forgotten hero of Kilkenny. This stop is going to be a quick one. You might be able to hear the city starting to come to life. I started recording this about 7:30 when everything was really quiet and the city is starting to come to life. And I'm on a bit of a busy street here. But I'm walking past something called St. Maul's Graveyard in Kilkenny. And I find this graveyard a really interesting place. So the history of the famine is something that I always think always present in Irish society, but never to the fore. It's just, I suppose, almost like a shadow, even in the 21st century. It's still there, everywhere, always around us. And I think St. Maul's Cemetery is a place that often reminds me of that. So the cemetery today is largely forgotten. It's always locked. There's a high wall around it. But inside the high wall, the ground rises up on all sides. So there's a house on either side of it, and the ground is on street level there. But the cemetery itself, I'm guessing, is 15 metres high. It's quite a high mound. And part of that high mound is actually human remains, that over the centuries, it has slowly increased in size. And obviously part of those bodies date back to the famine. It was actually in the early years of the famine, the workhouse burials were brought down here. The workhouse is not actually far away from here, it's about 200 metres away. But the workhouse burials were brought down here and buried at St. Maul's. And eventually there was complaints for several reasons. The graveyard was filling up, but also some people in the city felt it was unsightly to have paupers' burials making their way through the through the city streets. Anyway, from late 1846 or early 1847, can't remember the precise date, they started to bury the workhouse dead in a large plot at the back of the workhouse. And in 2001, they discovered 970 bodies dating from the famine period in here. But just St. Maul's is just somewhere that always reminds me of the famine dead in Kilkenny. They're not the only people buried in there, of course. There's people, I don't know how many centuries the graveyard goes back. Centuries and centuries of human remains are buried in there. But it does remind me every time I walk past that that is part of the story, and certainly was part of the story about how it went through a period of rapid use, I suppose, in 1846 as the workhouse deaths started to increase and then they were being brought down here. Now next I want to go on to a hospital. It's on what's called Madeline Street in Kilkenny. I'm making my way along Magdalen Street in Kilkenny, and this is not too far from what was a medieval suburb of Kilkenny, St. John's. So the medieval city was largely located on the west bank of the River Nore, but St. John's and the modern hospital are located on the east bank. Now this hospital, and I use that term lightly, was opened in around the 14th century. Now, the term hospital is certainly very different from what we understand it today. In the Middle Ages, understandings of health and healthcare was very, very basic. Most of the time, it was completely inaccurate, and actually allowing what was called a doctor at the time treat you was potentially, sometimes the cure was even worse than the disease itself. This hospital was probably opened up, though, to treat lepers. And again, maybe in a similar way to what I talked about when I was up at the asylum at the start, this is as much about keeping people with leprosy away from the wider population than actually any effective treatment. There was no effective treatment of leprosy. Just to explain this building to you, it's very much the one that the surviving building was doesn't date from the 14th century. I would imagine, at a guess, it's from the 15th or 16th century. It's very much like a tower house. There's hundreds, if not thousands, of tower houses across Ireland. It was a pretty standard, I suppose, building at the time. It has 1, 2, 3, 4 floors, and then would have had a wall walk on top, and it may have actually been used as part of the city defences as well, just given the nature of it. There's no comfort in this building, and again, this comes back to the idea that possibly, you know, it's more really about keeping lepers who are considered a threat to society away from wider society than necessarily helping them. There's no treatment for leprosy at the time. Also, it's a really sad aspect of the history of how lepers were treated in Ireland as well. One, how the lepers themselves were treated, but two, was often people with just skin diseases were considered to be lepers, and they were subjected then to the same treatment, which was essentially a social death, for want of a better word. If you contracted leprosy, there was actually a religious service, which is almost like a funeral that a person could go through, where in many ways that aspect of your life was over. So people in that hospital would very much know the term to be treated like a leper is to be treated like a pariah or whatever, and it is a very good basis in reality. Now, right behind the Magdalen Street Hospital, this brings us to the last stop, and this is one of my favourite places in Kilkenny. It's a graveyard. I don't think it's used that much today. There's still space for further graves, but there's a new graveyard not far from here where burials take place today. And this graveyard is really, I suppose it's almost like something out of a Gothic horror film. There's graves that are all falling all over each other. It's kind of, if I to explain it, it's almost like the graves just grew up from seeds, that someone threw seeds into the grass one day and the graves grew up. There's no, it seems to be almost no plan. They're all aligned in different directions. Now in here, there's one particular grave that I want to go and see. And I'm going to make my way through the cemetery here. So all the graves face east, except for three graves, which I've just passed there now, and they all face west. And they're actually the graves of priests. And that's a tradition that's generally followed, that priests will face the opposite direction. The graves of priests, rather, face the opposite direction to those of their parishioners. The idea being that on the last day, when people are resurrected, that the priest is facing the flock. But anyway, I'm making my way down now, and I'm looking for this grave. I had to cut out about 5 minutes of silence as I wandered around the graveyard trying to find the grave, but I finally have. And it's a beautiful stone cross, a Celtic stone cross, and then a stone slab that lies over the actual plot itself. Sadly, the stone slab is broken now into 4 places. A lot of the tombs in this graveyard are falling over. It's in really poor shape. But this grave is to a man called Robert Cain. And Robert Cain died, as his tomb says, on the 17th of August, 1858, and it says, rest in peace. This tomb was only erected sometime after his death, and the actual inscription on his tomb says this, that the people of Kilkenny got together and that they wanted to acknowledge this man who had been such an important figure in the city. So Robert Cain was famous in Kilkenny. He'd been a mayor of the city, I think on 2 occasions, certainly in 1849. He was the first Catholic mayor of Kilkenny. He was also a very famous patriot in the 1840s. He had been a member or a very close supporter of the Young Ireland movement. Even though he didn't participate in the Rising of 1848, he was imprisoned afterwards because he was considered a very dangerous person by the British authorities. What really interests me, though, about Robert Kane is what he did during the famine. Robert Kane was quite an extraordinary man in my mind. He spent a huge amount of time working in the workhouse, which was across the road from where he's buried, and this is not mentioned on his grave at all. And to a certain degree, I think his services in the workhouse wouldn't have been seen as important maybe as other things, but I think this man probably saved untold lives during the famine. So he worked in the workhouse from 80, he was one of the workhouse doctors until he went to prison in 1848. But he was also a person who really campaigned for the rights of the children in the workhouse, who were treated appallingly at certain times during the famine. And Robert Kane, through that time, really emerges as what I would call a famine hero. And I've actually made a podcast that's available on Patreon about Robert Kane, because I think a lot of the times during the famine, we focus on narratives about people who are either villains or victims, I suppose, is the way the narrative goes, isn't it? It's either landlords who evicted loads of people, or people who were forced to emigrate. And there's no room in that narrative for people who tried to do good. And I think there's lots of those stories there. But I think Robert Kane in Kilkenny is one of those people and deserves to be remembered as such. And his tombstone now is definitely fading into obscurity. As I said, the stone itself is cracked. And looking around the grave, I can see what's going to happen, because there's another tomb very similar to this, where the whole Celtic cross has collapsed over, and then there's other ones where they're starting to subside. So if something isn't done soon for Robert Kane's grave, he will be totally forgotten, because I guess it is that thing, once the grave goes, there's no marker to this man in the city. And as I say, he did quite extraordinary things during the famine. Had he not been one of the workhouse doctors, I think the already appalling rate of mortality in the workhouse would have been a lot worse. But he spent huge amounts of time in there in what was very dangerous conditions as well. And he actually got, I can't remember, was it typhus or typhoid from working in the workhouse? He survived it, but he did contract that disease. So there's no question he was paid, but it was extremely dangerous work. And he is a man that deserves to be remembered in the city. This is where I'm going to bring the podcast to a close. And I'm getting hungry. I haven't had my breakfast yet, but as I say, I came out early to try and avoid the traffic. I hope you enjoyed this podcast, folks. It's a bit of a introduction into what I see in Kilkenny when I'm doing my 2K walk. It gives you a sense of some of the history of the city and how history isn't necessarily all about dates. Hopefully that came across as well, that maybe it's more about places, people, landscapes. I'll be back next week with a new episode. In the meantime, I hope you all stay safe. Until then, Sloan.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.